Services, December 12th, 2024 at 4 p.m. Roll call.
Chair Kovacs.
Here.
Deputy Chair Levine.
Here.
Legislator Guevaras. Legislator Hansett.
Here.
Legislator Harmon.
Here.
Legislator Kitchen. Legislator Uchitel.
Here.
And Chair Criswell.
Here.
You have 6 members present, 2 absent.
Thank you. Okay, so we stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Approval of the October 30th special meeting minutes and November 14th regular meeting minutes. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve the meeting minutes of the October 30th special and November 14th regular meeting.
There a second? Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. It's approved. Resolutions for the December 17th meeting. Resolution 553, adopting proposed local law number 9 of 2024. A local law providing real property tax exemption of the county portion of the real property taxation and special ad valorem levies for the creation of new accessory dwelling units in accordance with real property tax law, section 421P. This has been going on for a few months. Last month, we postponed at the request of the planning director. He wanted to give us some new language regarding the short-term rentals. We did not receive any proposed revisions from the planning director. I just want to read to you section G of the law, and then we can discuss. In the event that an accessory dwelling unit granted an exemption pursuant to this law is determined to be utilized as a short-term rental, the exemption granted pursuant to this local law shall cease. So that's the current status of the law. Discussion? Motion? Yes, Majority Leader.
Is our thinking that because they asked us for a postponement and we're still waiting on the product of that postponement, that we should proceed with another postponement or take no actions?
I'm open to approving it or doing it for now. It's been on for a while now. This passed through Economic Development and the Health and Housing Committee.
My concern with that is if we're waiting on language from them, an up or down vote would imperil it because it either fails and has to be petitioned in its current form or it prevails and it goes to the floor in its current form. And then we're amending things from the floor, which is an outcome that we should avoid whenever we can. So my inclination is to postpone it. So I make a motion. I move to postpone it 1 month.
Is there a second?
Or rather, I move to postpone it till the next meeting of laws and rules.
Very good.
I'll second that.
Motion to postpone to the next meeting. Second. Further discussion? All in favor?
Okay. All right.
Close, seeing none. Motion to postpone is adopted. Resolution 682, calling the organizational meeting of 2025 to be held on Tuesday, January 14th at 6:30 p.m. My question or concern is this the last possible date to have an organizational meeting?
It is, and there were people who said to me that they were going to be out of town, and you said talk with the clerk and try to find something that was reasonable, and this is where it landed. So,
can I ask what happens if there is a blizzard on the 14th that we cannot meet?
Yeah, we'll have to. I mean, we're supposed to meet at that day. I'm not actually sure what the legal ramifications would be of that.
Do the powers of the legislature transfer to the executive for the balance of 25?
I
hope not. Council, is there, if there's a blizzard on the 14th?
We're just discussing whether you could pivot to a remote session if that contingency came up. And subject to further review, we think you can. But
we can't.
You can.
Oh, okay. Very good.
Forget about
Very good.
It.
Mm-hmm. All right. Is there a motion to adopt?
Move to adopt.
Second?
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion adopted. Thank you. Resolution 683, adopting proposed local law number 11 of 2024, local law amending the Alta County Charter and amending the Administrative Code for the County of Ulster to modify various provisions related to certain departments and duties. We had a public hearing on November 19th. There were no speakers, and these amendments are in keeping in line with the recommendations set forth by the Charter Revision Commission. Is there a motion?
Motion.
Motion to adopt?
Second.
Second. Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Seeing none, motion adopted. Resolution number 684, adopting proposed local law number 14 of 2024, a local law amending the code of the County of Ulster, Chapter 232, living wage in relation to applicability and compensation. This would increase the living wage amount to $17.70 per hour and would be applicable to all county employees in addition to previously covered service contractors and subcontractors. We had a public hearing on the 10th of December. One speaker.
Sure. So I'd like to get the opinion of this committee, because to the best of my understanding, when I created this, there was not going to be any impact on contracts, but I feel like I want more hard data on that. We have a lot of contracts out there, especially with organizations like Family Woodstock mm-hmm. and several other social service agencies, and I want to feel comfortable that the number that I proposed in this is not going to eventually be a burden to the contractors and those that at this point I just don't 100% know. So I'm a little torn between asking for this because I also realize that the state is changing their minimum wage requirements to $15.50 as of January 1. And so my goal with this was to not only meet that requirement but exceed it to the point where I felt we could easily hold that. And so I know that on the employee side, we're fine, mm-hmm. but I'm just not 100% sure on the contractor side. And so I'd love to hear your thoughts on this.
Yes.
Do we have, I mean, as we raise the question, do we have a sense of how many contractors might or would be likely to be impacted, and to what extent? Like, are we talking about a few people, a ton of people?
No, we're talking about a large number. I got a list that was 250 contractors that possibly this could somehow affect. And so we did this research back in 2021, and it's extremely hard research to do, because our contracts are also often sort of amalgam contracts. You know, we're paying X dollars for X service. So we're not drilling down deep into, you know, we get reports from the contractors that say what they're paying. But even that, it's like trying to suss all that information out is quite complicated. But what I don't want is I don't want us to get into a situation where then we have a big sticker shock moment of, well, we did this large move, and mm-hmm. and now we're going to have to, you know, this is how it's going to affect our downline contracts. So, does that answer your question?
I think so.
Now, how would this play out if we had any, if this law conflicted with an existing contract? What would control? Yes.
Go ahead. So my understanding, because we went through this in 2020 when the notion of a county minimum wage was first introduced, and part of the whole point of it was that it would apply to contractors, you know, far from being an unintended consequence, it was a desired outcome, and because largely the county residents are receiving services from the county through contractors, right?
So can I just interject one quick thing that you're saying? It was only contractors. The resolution that I put in actually is the addition of county employees. So what we did in 2020 was only contractors.
Okay, so but this is both, and we're concerned about the impact on the contractors.
Contractors,
right.
Correct.
Fine. So it was more than, so I mean, that just makes my comment even more, I think, important, which is that like this whole thing was around the contractors, and because of that, when we were looking at this, there was a lot of work that went into try to figure out how this would affect contractors. There's a high count of contractors. There are a high count of vendors, but a lot of those vendors are like sole provider.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a very, very big impact on a handful of contractors. And those contractors, and Family of Woodstock is probably the largest, that fall into that category, they have, not only is there a cost for, like, they want to pay their people more, right? And we want them to pay their people more, so we would be giving them more resources to pay their people more. One of the concerns then was that there are going to be compression issues as they raise the lower wages, because they have low wages across the board. Their management are underpaid, right? And which is part of what makes contracting to the private sector attractive for the county in the first place, which is a thing I have a huge problem with. So they were concerned about there being even more kind of ramifications there. But we did a lot of research. We had a lot of conversations with them and decided to proceed with it. And ultimately, it has not caused the issues that we feared that it would cause. So I agree that there's a big impact. I feel confident that it wouldn't be, I'm confident it's a manageable impact. To answer your question specifically, Chair Kovacs, is my understanding is that it would be only for contract renewals and for new contracts that this would come into effect. It's not retro, and it's mm-hmm. not like in, you know, an incision in the middle of the contract mm-hmm. term that then changes the term. That was the way that it was approached to that.
Very good. Deputy Chair.
Thank you. In regards to the, Chair Criswell's potential concerns relating to the wage applying to, you know, the timing and effect on employees of contractors and subcontractors, my question to the sponsor would be if there's any appetite for potentially delaying the implementation of this wage increase for those employers, the employees of the contractors and subcontractors, so that these, the organizations that we're in contract with would have a warning. They have a runway that they know that this is going to be coming, so that they can anticipate and plan for it, as opposed to, so if we would just have it on two different schedules for county employees and for those that are employees of contractors. Is that something that?
So I think we would have, thank you for that. Mm-hmm. I think we would have to then, does that substantially change this, that we would have to have new public hearings set for it?
No. Not public hearings. It's that 7 days on the desk.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. The other thing that, the other component of this that we haven't talked about yet is the exemption clause. So there are exemption clauses. And to my understanding, when we passed the 2020 law, there was only one organization that asked for an exemption. And Deputy Executive Capuano, do you know what the financial ramifications were of changing it last time?
I don't know fully. I know there was only one organization that did request the exemption.
Mm-hmm.
Now that it is the minimum wage level, so we wouldn't expect a high number of exemption requests. I will say that, as proposed, there's also carve-outs for, you know, your rate setting and the employers who are set by rate setting. Some of those are also covered, so those would not be impacted necessarily by this. But there is the exemption process, and exemptions are looked at on a one-by-one basis. So that could also give you the data to evaluate, really, if there was a fiscal impact, if this were to move forward.
Okay. And I spoke to both Ken Juris and March Gallagher about this, and they're both willing to look into it from their different perspectives. So I would have an appetite for doing what you said, Legislator Levine, is that if we could move forward with the county employees and just put a pause on the contractors until we get a little bit of more information so that we feel comfortable moving forward. Would we be able to then retroactively date that back to January 1 with our contracts, or would we just start whatever we did?
I don't believe you could retroactively do it. Okay. At the end of the law.
I'm just thinking it through. It sounds like we have some empirical evidence that we're on safe ground.
Well, it was a very different number change last time.
Okay.
So the number change last time, do we remember what it went from to 15?
There was a minimum.
I don't think
it was going from whatever the state minimum was at that time.
Right.
Which was mid-implementation of that big stage thing that was regional and everything.
Yeah, right. So it went to 15, and now what we're proposing is 1770. So it is a bit of a jump, you know, in terms of how it could affect some of these contractors.
Right. But if it went from 12 to 15.
It was a similar size jump.
It's comparable.
Just so you know, I want us to do this. my heart is in us doing this. I also just want to be fiscally responsible.
Yes, go ahead. My thinking is, you know, if reasons why we might delay are because we're concerned about the cost, right? And I don't think that is a reason to delay personally, because the point of this is to put more money in the pockets of low-wage workers that are providing services to county residents. The other potential reason to delay that I'm hearing is that we're concerned about the impact on the contractors. So two points about that. Number one, this would only come up on their contract renewal, right, which would be part of the procurement process. So that's a whole process that our procurement department would have to manage, and that's, you know, that is, that would hardly be a surprise because you know when your contract is coming up. And number two, if it's a problem, then you would ask for an exemption. And so there's a way out. There's a silver bullet built into this already for that concern. So rather than...
It's a silver bandage.
It's, sure, a silver bandage, whatever it is.
Yeah.
A magic door that you can exit through if you don't want to participate in this. And so my thinking is that rather than make the decision on the behalf of every contractor that we should push them all through the magic door of not getting their lowest wage workers' pay increased, we should give them that option by putting this on the books and letting them ask for the exemption if they feel that that's going to cause a compression issue for them or whatever it is.
I'm calling Leslie or comments.
Just a question for legal. Does it apply to existing contracts or just to new contracts? Just want to make sure that the language is clear on whether it applies to existing or new.
So Section 3 originally set forth for every service contract entered on or after January 1st, 2022, that's been redacted in the new language is beginning on the effective date of this local law, continuing thereafter, compensation for all covered employees employed by a covered employer shall be compensated in an amount no less than a living wage. So that is a significant change in that it doesn't necessarily it doesn't exempt or doesn't apply to just new contracts. It says all covered employees beginning
that's right.
by the effective date. That is a change.
Yeah, what I was going to bring up was I'm glad we're having this status because that's what I want to do is bring my concerns to the table. If we move this forward, I'd be happy to move it forward, but I felt like it was my duty to bring those concerns up.
Unless it are Nolan.
I agree with Legislator Utsdale that I think that this, well, I'm sorry, I agreed with his comment before we got the legal clarification. But we could amend this back to for every service contract, you know, you could separate the contractors from the Ulster County employees in terms of the start date and return to the language that only applies to new contracts. And I think that would be good because then you've got your runway and the exemption. And if you want it to apply to all Ulster County employees right away, I think and the new language can say that.
So it's a compromise. Yes.
I think that's well and good. I'm not really sure why that change is part of this. I would have thought that we would have done it the way we did it in 2020 or 2021, where we just made it for new contracts. So I don't. Was there, like, what was the legislation?
Some.
No.
For the chair.
Yes.
Some employee contracts might not renew for
another couple of years
right.
with Ulster County.
Right.
So it'd be delayed.
Yeah.
Council.
May I respectfully propose some language that council and I tangentially created? for every contract entered or renewed after, pick a date, January 1st, 2025, whatever date the committee seems to think is appropriate, and for the pay period for county employees after, and then set a specific date, and then that's the effective date for the increase.
That works for me, and why don't we just say January 1, 2025? That would make sense, correct?
This probably give a little compliance time, I would think, for the contracts, because that's pretty quick, no?
For
new contracts. If we're just talking new contracts, we're not going to be approving
new contracts. We said new or renewed. Some of them renew, like, automatically or roll over if there's an option.
February?
Yeah, just a little lead time. That's all.
So do you want to I want to separate them out then, say employees as of January 1 and contractors as of
March.
Give it a quarter.
Yeah.
Does everybody feel comfortable with that?
Yes. I'm fine with that, unless, I mean, it does strike me as odd that we would have made this change for this draft and then completely to undo it right now. If the intention was to make it apply immediately, I don't know why this change was part of this. I'm fine with going back to it. That's the way that we did it last time. But I'm just pointing that out. The second thing that I want to point out is I believe if we make this change tonight, we will not be able to vote on this on Tuesday, which might be the right thing, right? It's important to get this stuff right. And this language, I don't think that it would be wise to vote on this without changing this language, because that means that what would be the effective date is like whenever it's filed with the state, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that could be next week, right? Mm-hmm. And so that means that a contract that's working its way through all of a sudden is out of compliance with this law. I don't want to put us in that position. So I think we do need to change this tonight. I think we always needed to change this, because I think that that's problematic on face, even if it wasn't the other issues that we're talking about.
So if we changed both employees, currently there are no employees at lower than what the rate is that I proposed. So this would not affect anybody, any worker for the county right now. What if we move them both to the March 1st date? That would give us plenty of on-ramp for contractors. It would also give it the time allowed to give us that the time allowed to actually approve it.
Which will be our February.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You could do a date certain, or you could do a number of days tied to the filing with the Secretary of State. So if the effective date is filing the Secretary of State, and then, 60 days after, whatever, because we don't really know where March. We might adopt this in February. I don't, right?
Yeah. Unless we have a special meeting, that would be the next chance to adopt it. Or if we adopted it as a from the body of the whole, which I know that culturally we just do, but we certainly could. Those are two options that we probably will not develop. I think that's the right idea. I think that's the right idea, because things that get implemented immediately stress me out, and things that have hard dates stress me out. Mm-hmm. Things that say 60 days from now, that is cool.
Just want to remind you that there's a public hearing after we adopt it, about 30 days afterwards. So that's, I think, goes along with it should be 60 days or 90 days after it's effective.
Oh, so wait a minute. So when does that mean that it would actually take effect? Because it can't, because there's the county executive public hearing. That's what you're referring
yes,
to.
Yes, I am.
So we adopt this, and then the county executive has scheduled a public hearing. That public hearing happens. And only after that does it get filed, correct?
Mm-hmm. Right, so I was tying it to the date of file.
Right, and so we should probably do 30 days after it's filed would be my recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's going to be some lose of time between the adoption date and the public hearing on the exec side.
Mm-hmm. Senator Harmon.
Thank you, Chair. Do we have any sense of how many seasonal hires would be impacted by this? Because you know, that might make a huge difference for those individual workers.
Can I pass that kind of question?
No, I don't know the answer off the top of my head.
Okay. Lester Collins.
I'm concerned about the payroll management of this for people, because if it's in the middle of a pay period, it's going to be a weird thing for people. So I don't know if there's a language we can put in there saying first pay period after 30 days, 60 days, whatever it is, first full pay period. Because if it happens in the middle of someone's pay period, it's, I don't know if that all systems can manage that.
Would think they could handle that.
Man, I just don't know.
Computers do love it.
They do, stuff. But, you know, there's also a lot of old payroll period, payroll systems too.
I went in payroll for over 10 years, and that's not an issue.
Okay.
You got week one, week two.
Well, so you may sit at the table, by the way, please. Go ahead.
Especially with authority, really.
I like drop from the back door.
One more question.
So is the thought we want to amend it right now, or do we want to postpone?
I'm perfectly happy with what we came up with. I think that makes a lot of sense. It makes me feel more comfortable. It gives it a little more time to do some research, but I think it gives it some hard dates to get things done by.
You just rephrase that as an amendment.
Yeah.
If you'd like.
I think that the attorney type language that was working for the amendment.
Oh yeah, we have it. You want to read it?
Try.
How about for every contract entered or renewed?
This is section 3A.
Great. Section 3A. Which one now?
Sorry.
Yeah, first part, second,
we're talking about section 3, right?
Yeah.
This is section 3, is that what?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's what we'll...
Yeah, for every contract entered or renewed, 30 days after filing hereof with the Secretary of State, and for the first full pay period or pay period, as the case may be, for county employees, 30 days after filing with the Department of State. And then that would take the place of the beginning on the effective date of this local law, I think, right?
All right, so you're striking beginning on the effective date of the local law.
Yeah, you leave and continuing thereafter, I think, in between that. So in continuing thereafter, we pick up after what I had just read.
Can I get you to say it again? Did you say covered employees or county employees? Because I think under this revision, we were going to do all covered employees.
Yeah, it should be covered.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, except we're tying into two different things, I guess, because we're talking about pay periods or contracts being renewed. So maybe there's another way to engineer that if that's an issue.
Well,
can you read again, please?
This is not a question for the lawyers, it's a question for us. Is the legislative intent that we move from this having an effective date that it suddenly must be in place to instead being an effective date where any new contract after that effective date of renewal must have this? That's what we want? We do want that?
That's my understanding of what we've been talking about.
Okay, I'm just making sure.
Okay. Do we have the sufficient language for the amendment?
Just hand it to me later.
Okay.
As long as your people...
We all understand the amendment.
Can you read it again?
Read it, please.
Yeah. For every contract entered or renewed, 30 days after filing hereof with the Secretary of State, and for the first full pay period for county employees, 30 days after the filing hereof with the Department of the Secretary of State, and continuing thereafter, then we'll can just picks up from there.
Okay. Compensation.
Section 5.
That's good.
Question.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Is there a motion to amend to that effect?
I'll make that motion.
Motion to amend.
Second.
Further discussion on the amendment. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? No. And the amendment is approved on the resolution
as amended.
Well, we're going to postpone it, right?
No.
I think that we can, just if I may, I think that we can adopt it, and it just will not be on our agenda for Tuesday's session because it's not in compliance with the 7-day requirement, and it'll be on the next agenda for which it would be appropriate, which will likely be February 15th. Yeah,
and
February
we can 15th. Advance to Ways and Means too, so we can stay in that timeline.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's fine. Further discussion on the resolution. Seeing none. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Seeing none. The resolution as amended is adopted.
Thank you for the collaboration.
Resolution 685, adopting proposed local law number 15 of 2024, a local law amending the county charter and the code by deleting article 44, and amending the Ulster County charter and the Ulster County Administrative Code with respect to article 43. This is consolidating the safety department and insurance department to a department of risk management. We had a public hearing on December 10th. There was one speaker. Discussion?
Sure.
Motion? Motion to adopt?
Second.
Second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All right.
The resolution is adopted. Resolution 686, adopting proposed local law number 16 of 2024, local law amending the Ulster County Charter and the Ulster County Administrative Code by renaming Article 16 from Department of Purchasing to Department of General Services. Public hearing was held December 10th. No speakers. This creates changes the name of the purchasing department to the Department of General Services. Resolution. Motion.
I'll move it.
Second.
I'll second.
Further discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Seeing none. Resolution is adopted. Resolution 687, adopting proposed local law number 17 of 2024, a local law applying the salary revisions pursuant to the 2025 Ulster County budget to county officers serving fixed terms. Public hearing was held December 10th. One speaker, and this is affecting the Commissioner of Elections, Public Health Director, Social Services Commissioner, Personnel Director, and Tax Service Agency Director. Motion.
Motion to adopt.
Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Resolution is adopted. Okay. Resolution 688, adopting proposed local law number 18 of 2024, a local law applying salary revisions for certain elected Ulster County officials serving a fixed term. We had a public hearing on December 10th. There were three speakers, and this is for county legislators, chairman, and minority and majority leaders. I would like to offer an amendment to change section 4 so that the local law is effective immediately, but it becomes operative on January 1st, 2026. So that the effect of that amendment would be that the salary increases would go into effect after the next election. Is there a second?
There is a second.
Discussion on the amendment. Yes.
I think it's a very late stage to be introducing that idea. I don't support it at all. And I'm going to vote on it.
Any further discussion? Yes.
I just think it would be better as an elected official not to raise our salaries midterm. And
thank you.
That's it.
Further discussion? On the amendment. All those in favor? Two in favor? All those opposed? One, two, three, four. Amendment is failed. On the resolution. Further discussion? All those in favor? One,
aye.
Two, three, four. Opposed? Two opposed. Resolution is adopted. Resolution 707, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 19 a local law regulating the use of county parking lots to be held on Tuesday, January 7th at 6:35 p.m. Is that date correct? January 7th?
That's public hearings on Tuesday.
The 14th.
14th. Tuesday, January 14th at 6:35 p.m. Thank you. Okay. This is a local law that would regulate the use of the parking lot behind the county building to county business only. And this is proposed by legislator McCullough. Sarah, would you like to say anything?
Yes. A lot of people come to us come to the county building and they don't find parking. They're going to call them somewhere else to walk back. Even when Roofport talking on phones to two towns and that's a second shift to park and walk back. I think this would be good. When you read the whole thing, you see that if it doesn't say that they can't park there nights, weekends, or holiday, just during the hours of business. As I spoke to more people, maybe at some point, this big bus that you drop people off would mean less people would be driving. So it's long ways to deal with this, and it's like we need space for people to go to business here. That's a lot of asking.
Yeah, Lizard Hanson.
How would we enforce this?
Well, we have the parking attendant there, and we also have the sheriff's office. But my thing is, people know what the law is, they should abide by it.
You know, I will point out that years ago, there was a sign outside the gate where it did say this parking lot is for county business only. And so that was the policy at some point. I think the sign was removed. Here we are. Further comments? Through the chair.
Thank you. Through the chair to the sponsor. My understanding is in terms of some type of enforcement mechanism would be that a visitor to the county, you know, who comes into the lot and gets a ticket, needs to get it validated at whatever department they're doing business with. When they leave the lot, they would it would be proven that they were here doing business. And if they didn't have a validation, that would, you know, I don't know if there's some type of, you know, I don't know if it's we can look at some type of addition of penalty or something, you know, but that would be, I think, the way we do about enforcement would be validation of the ticketing. I don't know if we have the jurisdiction to be able to, like, you know, tow vehicles or something that are not, you know, not here on county business, but I would think that that's what we would be able to do in terms of validation and enforcement. Is that your understanding of it?
All of that's in there.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you, Chair. Again, through the chair to the sponsor. In addition to perhaps validating parking in the county office building, perhaps a middle ground is you don't have to get that parking validated, but you will pay a higher rate to use the parking lot if you are not here on county business. I don't know how workable that is.
But then if you do that, it's still taking away spots from people that can't do business.
One of the problems that we're having is that folks who work locally mm-hmm. are actually parking in the lot in the morning, and then they're staying until after the lot closes, so it's open. So there is no way to see that they parked here for 9 hours, you know. Mm-hmm.
Those are comments.
I don't think this fixes that, though. Unless we're going to go through the entire parking lot every day and look at license plates and see who is and who isn't currently in line at the DOE, at the county office. I mean, how do we enforce it?
Yeah, it's a similar concern. I think it's the right direction. But I think there is the problem that it isn't enforceable against, against people who know the system, that system can be gamed. Will it help to have this as our policy and put the signs back up that says that, you know, that will then encourage people who follow such signs and who care about being law-abiding. So I don't think it completely rules out doing it, but I am a little concerned that we don't have a mechanism to enforce it. And it applies to all the county facilities, not just here. It would, as I read it, in Section 4A, parking at county facilities. At other places, I don't think it's as much a problem as it is here. I guess we could have something where when you come in, you press a button of which department you're going to, and you put that in the car windshield. And I think that the enforcement mechanism here would potentially be just the issuing of a ticket that gets put on the car, just like if you're parked the wrong place somewhere else. Although Zek's team's hand went up very quickly when I said that.
If your legislative council doesn't have the authority to ticket within a county parking lot, and also just the personnel concern, our sheriff's office is consistently understaffed. And it is extremely difficult to hire deputies. We're down now 4 rural patrol at this point. And the question on jurisdiction on ticketing. So can they ticket within the
council?
So my understanding is the sheriff does have jurisdiction to ticket in our lot, or his or her designee. I believe that could be another police officer, another agency, I believe, but I'd have to double check on that.
Yeah. But it's actually if it's tax.
Yeah.
Yes, Debbie's here.
Legislator Nolan and myself, I think she must have ESP because mm-hmm. I was thinking along the same lines on in terms of entrance to the lot. I was thinking either having a staff member there, you know, getting information as to the purpose of the visit or some type of kiosk, equipment. I do think, however, you know, we do have a kiosk in the front of the building, in the lobby of the building for DMV, asking for reason of visit and having to punch in the information. So I'm thinking the technology exists to be able to put something in, to be able to print out a ticket that would be displayed on your dashboard or something of that nature. So maybe that's something that we could be exploring in terms of being able to, have be presented or left in the vehicle. And then if we have, if the sheriff's department is able to, if we're able to have the sheriff's department, I guess, deputize some other agency to be able to enforce it, maybe that's an amendment that could be offered or a compromise. To be able to make this workable.
Sure, as well.
It's actually an interesting idea to have somebody capture someone as they come into the parking lot to say, what are you here for and how can I help you? You know, because I see people come into the building and they're like, what floor am I on? Where am I going? So if you actually had a greeter, because at the end, they're basically just saying, here's a dollar and they move on. There's no interaction. There's a lot of interaction. But I think when you get somebody coming in, we could actually be more efficient in helping them find what they need and make sure they know where they're going or who they're trying to connect with. I know that's a whole staffing thing it would create, but
parking lot steward.
Yeah, a parking lot steward.
Mr.
Deputy County Exec, were we looking at the parking lot a while ago, or were we going to? Because I know the issue came up of like the handicap parking is in the back and then they can't even get in the building. So anyone that has a disability has to go around to the front of the building. I thought there was talk of something with the parking lot. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah. So we talked about it when we were talking about security.
Yeah.
So specifically with individuals who may be in a wheelchair, mobility impaired, if they come up to the door, they can always ring the bell to get assistance to enter that way rather than going around to the front of the
So that's the only talk of that. There was nothing more about the parking.
That was kind of, yeah, that was where we left off at least.
So I think that one of the first things that we could do is find out what happened to the signs and why they came down. And I think some of our employees here in the building that have been here a long time would know. Because if you put that right, if you put that up and you let people know as soon as they pull in here, perhaps that will, it's just a step, but. So I've got a couple of questions and maybe an idea. My first question is, as laws and rules, unless I'm misunderstanding our purpose, suggestions are not a part of our purpose. So, like, kind of just like put up a sign and hope, I don't know how that plays, first of all. But then it sounds to me like we just brainstormed a more comprehensive plan to meet the goal of the legislation. So, you know, we talked about, ticketing on your way in and or on your way out. We talked about making sure that there's people to direct those coming to the building for county services. What if we were to, and I don't know what the cost is, we'd have to find out the cost of automating our in and our out, so that there's some way of having variable pricing, and then the lovely gentlemen who work there could perhaps spend more of their time helping people enter into the county space, which can be very confusing.
Yeah. Legislator, I'm sorry, Bacall.
If we decide to punch in a code and get a ticket, I think that ticket should still be stacked. Otherwise, it's another game people can play.
What's your comments?
I'm actually struggling to understand the reason for this.
I'm sorry.
I don't know what the problem is, truthfully. I mean, I've worked here for almost a year. I've never had a problem parking.
I
have. Yeah.
Well, maybe I'm just lucky, but, you know, it seems like a lot of struggle for something I don't think is that a huge problem. Maybe I'm wrong.
It's a huge problem.
But.
Yeah. I will say I typically drive by. My office seems full.
And I've received a ticket for parking on the street when I couldn't park in the parking lot, and there are other legislators for whom that's true. But I would, that's not a big problem. I mean, that's covered by the pay increase. It's $25. But on the day that that happened, I thought, oh, if I were here, for the DMV and I'm, you know, that $25 is, you know, tight for me. I when somebody comes here to do that and they can't get in because the person who works across the street is parked in this lot, I think that's a major deal, even if it's only a few, and I don't think it is only a few.
There's another legislator who thanked me for this, and he said that over a span of time, he's paid over $250 in fines. It is a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sorry. Deputy County Executive.
Through the chair, back to legislative council, I reached out to the sheriff's office. They do not have the jurisdiction to issue parking tickets. They enforce state and traffic violations.
I mean, inspection, registration, trouble.
Well,
we could do shared services with the city of Kingsville.
The second is probably the
solution,
however, that is the sheriff's.
I think they could write a parking ticket under the
VTO. It's not a state violation. Traffic laws.
Well, this would, I mean, this gives them statutory authority, the statute being right here. It says in Section 5 enforcement, the vehicle is determined by the sheriff or the designee to be parked in the manner it's for this local law. The sheriff or the designee is hereby authorized to remove and tow said vehicle. And the sheriff or other municipal, and then that section B, section A, or sorry, subsection A of section 5 says, if the operating vehicle violates any provision of this local law, the sheriff or other municipal police officer shall be empowered to issue a summons to such operator to appear at such a time indicated before the local justice court having jurisdiction and so forth. So, I mean, it appears that this
grants. If the sheriff doesn't yet have that authority, either this grants that authority or this is inconsistent with our powers to grant such authority.
Those are your thoughts?
So I'm convinced that Brown.
So will you help
my, and my daughter and kids go into the DMV because she parked or whatever. So yeah. I'm convinced it's a problem. So if we're going to solve it, then we really need to solve it the way that anyone else would solve it, which is to put an actual automated system where you have to put in money or a credit card to get back out of here at all times of night, day and night, and make it expensive. You know, if you don't have a either a pass because you're an employee, or you don't have a what's it called, the
validation
sticker, it's $20. And that's going to work. Nothing else is really going to work.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
To return to the question of enforcement and the sheriff, I am not a lawyer, but I think there would be issues with the state law superseding this. I don't know those laws, and I don't know if legislative counsel would have, you know, needs to opine on it. Because I think there are ways to, for this to be enforced. If it's not the sheriff's office, then, like I say, an agreement with the city of Kingston, who does do parking. But I think the idea of having equipment that will charge you a lot of money if you don't have that sticker on it when you go back out is workable. And then the county employees have passes, and they're given out, and they work half the year and don't work half the year, work for some other lot half the year. I do like the idea of having stewards, but I think that's potentially quite expensive. And a long-term project to rearrange where we, so that people would come in where there's a booth that such a person could sit in. Or I guess maybe the booth could just be moved. But to move forward with some remedy more quickly, I would say that we could pass this knowing that it's not fully enforceable, and then work to improve the system both with physical structures and other changes.
Further discussion?
Thank you, Chair. I'd love to know if the sponsor would be willing to postpone this so that we could fluff and fold it so that it does maybe even more than the original incentive.
Yes, sir.
Lizzie Nolan.
Yes, through the chair. What would we be looking to do?
I would suggest that we change this to be set the parking fee for $20, unless you have a validation from a county office or your county employee, and that be collected. I mean, initially, you know, whether it's a person there, you know, I don't want to lose a person and say you don't have a job anymore because we have an automated feature, but maybe over time we grandfather that out and we put a payment meter there as opposed to a booth. That's the only thing that's going to really work, in my opinion.
What
we're voting on tonight is really the public hearing. So I would say let's move the public hearing forward, see if the public has any interesting ideas about it. And it is on the first night, so it's really the organizational meeting that we're on. So we're not going to be voting on anything. So this will go to committee again. Yeah. It will have chance to, and it will give us a chance to have some more thoughts about it.
Is there a motion to move to public hearing? Motion to adopt.
A second.
Second. Okay. Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. All right.
Resolution is adopted.
Thank you, Legislator Powell.
Stay right there. Resolution 709, establishing a policy for legislator public accessibility, introduced by Legislator McCullough. Let's say a few words about this.
I'm just going to add a little knowledge.
Okay.
I'm not particular kind of person. I don't expect anybody to be like Greg. first of all, I call it due, but the thing is, when we run for office, we're knocking on the door, asking people to vote for us, support us. And in return, we should be able to be reachable. And tell people what to do or how to do a pitch. What I suggest is have some kind of answering service, something where you can check your messages at night, weekends. I help people on holidays. I don't mind. And, Friday at 4:35 o'clock, people's issue does not end. People are always going to be best. And we should be there. We should the same people that vote for us, not for us. So we should just say, if we're talking about salary increases, this is another way to have some justification behind it. In my opinion.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Mr. Collins.
I agree with the spirit of this. Right now, we don't have a single number that constituents can call and make sure they get to their own legislator. As far as I know.
Correct.
And I think that's what this would help us do. If someone could call, because no one knows their legislator. I'm sorry, let's be honest. I'm exaggerating, but 90% of the people don't know their legislator. They just know they need help. And if they can call the central office, the central office can say, oh, your legislator is, you know, Legislator McCullough. Mm-hmm. And we'll leave a message and we'll contact him and give him the message and he'll get back to you. That would be really helpful for all of us, I believe.
So that's more or less the system that we have now. Someone can call our office, mm-hmm. leave a message, and that message will make its way to us, and we'll call them back or whatever. But I think what Legislator McCullough is proposing is that there'd be a phone number that they can call where they'll actually be routed to an individual, either something that can ring through to one of our phones or that can go to a voicemail that we set up. My personal feeling is the spirit of that, I completely agree with. I think that's a great idea. I use a Google Voice number, right? Yeah. And so, what I really think that this should be is I think it should be an RFP that our office manages for a phone system that will, fulfill that goal. I've used RingCentral professionally in the past at places that I've worked, so that is that's an option. But again, it should be an RFP. I think there is a cost associated with this. I don't think that it currently has a cost assigned to it because it's only been referred to the Laws, Rules, and Government Services Committee. So I think that it should. I think we need a system. I think that system is going to cost money. I don't think it's going to be a huge expense. And I think that I think it's worth it, but I think it is going to be some kind of an RFP that our office will need to manage.
Lizard Nolan.
Yeah, I think that the current system doesn't have anybody answering the phone on the weekends and holidays, and that's part of what this would address. If all of the legislators published a number that the legislator provided on the website, then there would be no cost. So it would be cost to the legislator to set that up, assuming there's no free services that would do it. If the legislator doesn't want to use a personal phone number most of the legislators have their personal cell phone numbers on this or something they already set up for themselves. This would require that everybody do one of those two things. So that is a separate thing than your proposal, as I'm hearing it, which would be that really the county, this is a service the county should provide for the legislators, that they hire a service and that then the legislator just plugs into it when they get onboarded as a legislator. And that would have a cost. But I think those are two different things. What's in front of us is the free version that forces the legislators to take responsibility for having accessibility. Like, clearly, the director of planning has accessibility.
I want to second.
Well, in a second, what legislator you should tell us thoughts about Google Voice. When I first became a legislator, that was the first thing I did. I got a Google Voice number. It's free. And it allows me to then see, oh, this is a legislative call that's coming through. And, you know, it's public on a directory. We have a physical directory, and we have that directory is online. So those numbers are accessible to people, but just not everybody has their own number.
Mm-hmm.
The point is that Friday at 4:30, 5 o'clock, people lives doesn't end. And I believe we need to be there for them night, weekends, holidays, if you can. Nobody doesn't have to do anything to watch. At least if you can get the message on a Saturday and jump on that situation first thing Monday, instead of waiting to Monday to get the message and maybe get to it Wednesday, people lives are at stake.
What I would say to that is, you know, every legislator is different. Some are comfortable being accessible 24/7. Some may not.
It's not 24/7.
No.
In Pepperdine, you see that you set your hours. I'm available such for 4 to 6 or 5 to 6, 4 to 8.
If this, what is it called?
Google Voice.
Google Voice is available. And
it's through the interwebs.
It's a series of tubes.
No, not that these minutes. But if that's something that is a free service, why wouldn't we take advantage of that and set every, you know, mm-hmm. be part of our orientation when we start?
So
would we be requiring that of all legislators or just encouraging it?
Well, for me, I don't know. But right now I give my personal cell phone and it's getting a little, sometimes it gets overwhelming because I never know if it's like, do I get it? Do I not? But if we had a number and I could say, okay, this is definitely, a work call, you know, and I think that we should be able to set our own hours, and be able to take a day off. But I think that if this is a free service, I think that's where we could start.
Sure.
So, Google Voice is free for individuals. We would be what they refer to as an enterprise. Not free at all. Very expensive.
Okay.
So up there with Social and other like Ivana or whatever the other main providers are. So it's it's the type of thing where you could go set it up, but if we're going to have our office set up 10 of them, or 23 of them rather, okay. it would have a cost. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. People can set up their own, and that's already true. Yeah.
What's your comments?
I think that we should all, you know, I have this, we talked about, I have Google Voice. When it comes in, I can see that it's, you know, from that particular phone number. It's a little bit inconvenient because it doesn't go to my voicemail. It goes to a Google Voice voicemail that I have to go online to listen to. So it's a little bit less convenient than just an actual service. My question is, I don't know that we can require legislators to do that. We can't require them to even come to meetings. Truthfully, we can't. Right? So how do we require them to have a phone? We can't do that legally. So what we can do is we can spend some money and have a system that they can get into for free and be part of and get set up for them automatically when they join the legislature. And that would actually be probably more effective than trying to get people to do Google Voice or something else that's free. So I do like the idea of a system, and yes, it would cost money, or you, first day as a legislator, you get, this is your number, this is your extension, we're going to put that on your business card. We're going to put that on the website, and it'll always be there. I think that makes it easier for legislators to actually be in contact instead of having people that are technology knowledgeable knowing how to set up a Google Voice.
Since we're brainstorming, we could also have a legislator or legislators who do this function for the body. And make that a higher salary for the people or persons who would be doing that. Part of my ruminations about the salary increase is that it flows across the board. And I'm not sure that workload is being taken up in an increased fashion across the board. So having positions within the legislative body that serve the body and that are qualify that person for additional compensation, like the majority and minority leaders, is another way to get this covered. And it might mean that the people that call in get somebody who actually likes taking constituent calls and knows how to handle them and route them, rather than some requirement that, you know, gets somebody to a different voice message that gets ignored than whatever happens now.
Any further discussion? Is there a motion?
I think I would be comfortable postponing this resolution to, you know, further the discussion on this. I think there's been a lot of interesting and good ideas that have been offered on this. If it's agreeable to the sponsor, I would be comfortable just postponing it and allowing the opportunity for other legislators to continue to offer ideas to potentially make this more enforceable and exactly. So that would be my I would be most comfortable doing that tonight would be on a postponement. I think the idea of this is just though, so that's why I'm not opposed to it, but I just think it's in the best interest to postpone this evening.
Is it a motion?
It's a motion to postpone.
Second. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Opposing none. Okay, resolution 709 is postponed to the next meeting.
Going on postpone?
Yes.
Forthcoming resolutions. You should be aware of resolution 556, amending the rules of order as they relate to decorum. We'll be on the December 17th session agenda. Any new business? Any old business? Is there a motion to adjourn?
Mm-hmm.
Motion? Second? All in favor?
Second.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
We cheers.